to the Global Glacier Casualty List, a website where people can learn about dozens of glaciers that have melted away or will soon be gone. Users can see images of each one and read its story almost like an obituary written by people with a personal connection to the glacier.
For them, glaciers are not these abstract bodies of ice, but they are sources of water. They are sources of folk tales and history and origin stories.
The team hopes that sharing these stories will help people connect to the loss and inspire climate action. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hello and welcome to Earth Riot Radio. I'm Reverend Billy, here with Savitri D and our editor Jason Candler. And our show is a special show today. Earth Riot comes to you from an interview we had with Leonard Peltier, who's just out of 49 years of imprisonment for a crime he did not commit. And he has so much to teach us, so privileged to talk with him. We're also going to talk with Norman Siegel and his latest Justice in Real Time. And of course, the Stop Shopping Choir. Now here, we're just in Richmond, Virginia. In just a couple hours, we'll be back on stage with the Stop Shopping Choir. And our message in this time of the Earth's crisis is simply that we must find a kind of change in ourselves. It's going to feel strange, but it comes from something the Earth will give us, and we call it love. Love is a quality. It's the strongest force. The love just comes into us, and it gives us a chance to survive. And we, with that force, we will be able to oppose these billionaires and their toxicity and the institutions that they control. Well, it just does seem impossible to a lot of us. And we have our doubts too sometimes. But Love Earth is a good name for an effort, musical and shouting at the wind what we believe we can do to be with the earth in this struggle for life. We hope you do this with us. Somebody give me an earth-a-looyah here today. And now, let's listen to Leonard Peltier.
Refresh my memory. What's this about?
We're from a group in New York City called the Church of Stop Shopping.
Okay.
And we fight consumerism, and saturation advertising, and the life of too much convenience and products. And and we have a choir, and we oftentimes go into fossil fuel companies, into their lobbies, and sing songs and hand out information about the toxicity of their corporations. We specialize in banks like JP Morgan Chase and HSBC and UBS, the oil banks, big oil banks.
Yeah.
Who feed money to the pipelines.
Yeah.
So we're activists, but we're artists. So that's our, and we're so honored to be with you today. We have questions, of course.
Sure.
Well, so, our perspective is the earth. You know, we're earth activists and we work for the earth. So we come to you from that perspective.
All right, cool.
Most importantly.
And I'm Billy, and this is Savitri. You got our names?
Savitri. Okay, cool name.
What do we call you? What's the
Basically, I got numerous names of name from different tribes, and I'm more well known by just playing Leonard Peltier, so we'll just continue to use that.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I would start by asking you really to talk to us about AIM and the legacy of AIM. As an earth activist, I feel a lot of people don't know the story of AIM and all the amazing work that AIM did and the successes that AIM had in activism. I know AIM started out in the prisons, but moved swiftly to the whole country. And I just wonder if you would talk to us about the American Indian movement and what it means to you and how it lives today.
Yeah. Well, I should mention that I had been an activist numerous years before I joined up with the American Indian Movement. Actually, my activism started in 1953 when I was taken from this reservation and put into a boarding school. Uh-huh. I'm one of the boarding school survivors. I was 10 years old and I almost died there, but I survived that. And then I continued with different actions, different groups, saving this reservation. I was just a kid that was just there. It was a number. But I was there with my adults, my father and his generation. We were the second reservation to be terminated, and we stopped it here. We stopped our termination, and other tribes followed suit after they seen that one little reservation could stop such a huge effort by the United States government to commit genocide against us, and that's what it was. If they would have took away our treaties and our reservations, we would have no longer existed. In fact, in 1950s, early 50s, the major magazines, I think one of them was named Look, was on the headlines of the vanishing American Indians. We don't know what happened. They just disappeared. That was the goals of this government for Native people, to make us disappear, vanish. And I was... introduced to the movement, the struggle of Native people for survival at that early age. So then in 1970, I think it was, I joined up with the American Indian Movement. Maybe it might have been 71. But our goals as the American Indian Movement policies were, we would not go to any reservation, which was actually a concentration camp. And the Nazis patterned their concentration camps off of the what they of the ones here created by America. And I joined up with them, and I first heard Dennis Banks speaking on the radio. And I was very impressed with his speech and the way he was presenting himself. And I had asked my sister, I said, have you heard this guy before? And she said, I hear him all the time. He's always on the radio. So I ended up meeting him in Denver, Colorado. I met Vernon Belkert in Denver, Colorado. Then we had our convention in Leech Lake in Minnesota. And then that's where I met up with Dennis, and I was very impressed with his beliefs, his policies, and the policies of the American Indian Movement, which was we could not go to any reservation and impose our policies or whatever. We had to be invited by the chiefs, the real leaders of the tribe, clans, mothers, and the elders. We could not go, and we did not go. to any reservation. I liked that. I thought that was the right policy to follow. So I joined up with the American Indian Movement, and the rest is basically all history. What I was involved in, and it was numerous actions across this country. You know.
Oftentimes we can't remember because of the way that the consumer culture erases things. Mm-hmm. Kind of got built-in racism there. We don't remember, for instance, the Indian Wars, Big Mound, Dead Buffalo Lake, Stony Lake, Whitestone Hill.
Wounded Knee, Sand Creek. The list goes on. Hundreds of so-called battles that went on were actually assaults on defenseless villages, stuff like that. After the traders, native people that were traders, became scouts for the American government, pulled surveillance on these villages and watched as the warriors and the leaders went hunting and left the village basically defenseless. There was a small group of people there, not enough to hold off the cavalry though. And other groups that, vigilante groups that were out there killing off villages. And that's the true history. That's what really happened. Whenever we won a war battle with them, it was called a massacre. Mm-hmm. And whenever they destroyed one of those villages, killing men, women, and children, they called it a battle. And we are people of the earth. We believe in Mother Earth. We know that Mother Earth provides everything for us. Without her, we would not be able to survive, nor would we exist. So we were the first and only Earth environmentalists here in America, in what's called the Americas today. From the beginning, we tried to teach that to our invaders, but they came and their philosophy was totally, ideology was totally different from ours. And they wanted to come in and mine, drill, drill, as Trump says, and destroy the earth and the environment. And that's basically what's happening today. As we see, the earth's on fire right now. It's burning.
Yes.
That's because of the environmental destruction that they've created. We love our mother. She's our mother. Mother Earth, that's our mother. She provides everything for us. Without her, we wouldn't be able to survive. We wouldn't be able to eat, nothing, you know.
Leonard, do you think that the Earth is communicating with us in some way when there are these superstorms and wildfires and droughts?
Of course. I mean, the Earth is fighting back. And we've always, if you go back and listen to what we've said 60 years ago, we were saying that then. It's telling us, you're destroying the Earth. Mother Earth, you're destroying. She's trying to send us a message. And we see it's still going on today. I mean, Canada right now is on fire. And then they're blaming individuals, saying some individuals starting these fires and stuff like that. But come on, not the massive fires that are going on across Canada or here in America and California, where else? Massachusetts, New York. No, I believe, and we believe, that Mother Earth is talking to us, telling us.
What kind of resistance can we make right now to the government and the big banks and the oil companies and consumers driving all day and buying things?
I think the resistance that we should continue doing is stop buying the products that are destroying the earth. You know, there's other, mankind is very intelligent. He's got the, they can create other products to replace, say, like the oil and you know, for example, just one thing. They can create stuff like that off the sun, to, you know, the solar and all this other stuff. They've showed us they can do that. And that's what we got to do. We got to stop destroying Earth by creating new things that will help us save the Earth.
Because the rest of my life is flying by yours, the lives of our body shade through the doors. Because you walk by me and I walk by you, everyone we've ever loved is walking by too. Because the air around you moves like light, I gather the four walls and fall with the night. Because the hours were ours, time carries the part. Our quiet wildness is the beat of my heart. Because the rest of my life is flying by yours, the lives of our body shade through the doors. Because you walk by me,
join civil rights attorney Norman Siegel for Justice in Real Time.
Pleasure. Good to see Savitri and Reverend Billy. We've got a lot of updates and some new cases, so let me begin. In the area of immigration, on Friday, August the 1st, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed the Federal District Court decision in Los Angeles enjoining ICE from making arrests without, quote, reasonable suspicion, end of quote, and it held that the plaintiffs were likely to succeed in showing that the federal agents made arrests on how people looked, how they spoke, and where they lived and worked. Now, the standard is likely to succeed, and the Ninth Circuit affirmed the district court. Now, I assume the Trump people are going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and we'll have to see what happens here, because a trial court is usually the person or persons who determine the facts. So if the facts here are in the record, hopefully the Supreme Court won't undo this one. With regard to immigration, we have some new cases, but I'll hold off because I want to talk about academic freedom. We talked about it last week. We talked about George Mason University in Virginia, where the Department of Justice opened an investigation into the diversity program there. And the school's board met last Friday. And at this point, the president, Gregory Washington, is staying, at least for now. But an update on academic freedom, which was shocking this morning when I read the New York Times, they have a story in there where Trump is now asking $1 billion from UCLA to restore hundreds of millions of dollars. I think they held back about $584 million from UCLA with regard to federal research funding that the government halted, according to a draft settlement agreement reviewed by the New York Times. So the difference here, you know, Columbia, Brown, Harvard, they're private schools. UCLA, it's like the CUNY system in New York. It's state-run. It's public. And this is, I think, a focus on L.A., but it could be that, you know, CUNY better get ready because I think they could potentially do the same thing here. So the other thing I wanted to point out and update, we've talked a little about emergency applications, known in the Supreme Court as the shadow docket. So the New York Times last Sunday did an excellent editorial. It talked about in the Bush and Obama years, that's 16 years, both of those administrations filed in the 16 years, 8 emergency appeals. That's one for every 2 years. Trump, one, filed 41 times. That's like almost one a month. But he outdoes us. And in Trump, too, because through July, he filed 21, which is almost now one every week. The Supreme Court on the first three of the 21, they denied them. But for the last 18, they've granted the emergency appeals. They're allowing, according to the Times, Trump to expand his executive power and alter the structure of government. I basically say the Supreme Court is now too deferential to the Trump administration. So with regard to new cases, going back again, immigration, there was one filed last Wednesday in the federal court in California. It focuses on a part of the immigration law that allows the Secretary of State to determine that a non-citizen poses a threat to the United States foreign policy and can be removed from our country. This case argues that it's unconstitutional to use this provision for speech and other activities by the First Amendment. In the context of this case, the plaintiff is the Stanford student newspaper, and they're arguing that students self-censor or they quit the paper out of fear of retaliation. And you can understand that in the context of foreign students. Two lawsuits filed in New York, a shout out to the ACLU and NYCLU, disclosure, I used to work for the Civil Liberties Union, but they filed two lawsuits last week with regard to the 26 Federal Plaza, which is downtown in Manhattan. The first one challenges the conditions of space where migrants are detained. They argue that it's overcrowded and unsanitary. That's on the 10th floor. And they're being held for days, and in some instances for as long as a week. They have no way to communicate with their lawyers. I applaud that lawsuit because you've seen what's going on and you read about it, and someone had to do something. The second lawsuit they filed was challenging the arresting of the migrants who show up for a hearing on the 12th or the 14th floor, and they're arguing it's a trap. It's a trap because people come, and what do? If the case is dismissed or even if it's adjourned, the people from ICE in the hallways with masks, not necessarily wearing any uniforms, they seize people. So they're challenging it with regard to whether that whole process is constitutional.
Breathe the smog of broken data.
Breathe the smog of
climb up the tree. Let's you and me go die. Everyone's unknown beautiful face. Of everyone's unknown beautiful face. I love the horizon, leaping to its depth. Let's embrace what isn't there. Of everyone's unknown beautiful face. Let's go for a swim in the raging flood. Of Mother Earth's self-care.
I'm Savitri D with Reverend Billy. We're here in Richmond, Virginia on tour with Neil Young and the Chrome Hearts. Just want to thank Leonard Peltier for giving us that interview. We'll be airing it over the next 4 weeks. And want to thank Charles Ford and Peter Mark for their help connecting us to Leonard Peltier. You can check out his work. We have a link on our website, revbilly.com. And you can see his paintings and his prints. And if you want to support Leonard, that's a really good way to do it. We're so grateful to Jason Candler, our editor, and you, our listeners. Earthaluyah.
Somebody give me an Earthaluyah. One more time, Earthaluyah.
Believe your own eyes. Those real walkers. You're listening to CJSF 90.1.